And it just establishes some kind of idea, because remember when we read our book, it said deep down every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. And sometimes it's covered by circumstances and problems and all kinds of stuff. So leave it turned and turn to the non-God side. And get your pen out. Now our measurement is like a speedometer. 0 to 100. That's how we're going to measure. This is not rocket science. This 10-step inventory, if you go across the United States alone, you'll find it in different forms. And everybody will insist that their form is the right form. You know, it's just an easy way to look at things in a way. And some helpful suggestions can be made. So anger, how much of my life, 0 to 100, in some sort of a figure, 50%, 25%, 75%, I don't know, whatever it happens you think it is, anger, how much percentage, 0 to 100, do I spend in anger? So it might be 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. Of course, I used to be angry all the time when I was drinking, unless I was good and drunk. Let's go down the page now. Do not think about this with the mind. You will mess up. Just let it come naturally as a feeling. Don't worry about thinking it over. The ego wants to argue with you. How much of my time do I spend criticizing? 0 to 100. Do I spend 25, 50%, 100%? How much dishonesty do I have? I'm going to move quickly now because I don't want you thinking. I want you just to write a number. The number is not that important at the moment, because that number will probably change before long. How much doubt do I have? 20%, 50%, 100%. Envy. How much envy do I have? 0 to 100 now. We're not going to add up and down. We're going to go across, so don't worry about it. Just 0 to 100, get a figure. You can change it as we go. False pride. False pride is when you have to tell people things that you really aren't, because you don't think maybe, you think you'd be better if you tell them something. Like, he would say to me, "You're so tall, did you play basketball?" Oh yes, I had a whole story with it. It was a big lie, but I didn't. "You're from Oklahoma, do you play the guitar?" Yeah. "I could play 3 chords and 2 runs. I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket." Am I frightened? Gluttony, the overwanting of things. It doesn't have to be food. The overwanting of things. Greedy. Am I greedy? Do I have harmful acts? It's one where you sit down and plan something. "I'm going to get even with you for what you did to me at the meeting." Do I have hate? Some of these are hard to admit. Am I impatient? Am I inconsiderate? You can't help it. You're selfish and self-centered. You've got to be a little inconsiderate, you know. Am I insincerity? Do I go to people and smile at their faces, and as soon as their backs are to me, I start talking bad about them? Am I insincere? Am I intolerant? Just can't stand it, you know. Do I have laziness? Just put a figure in there if we go. It's easy. Just make it. Don't work it hard. It's not like you're going to fail life. Am I lustful? I tell the boys a little lustfulness is good, you know. Better than a dead fish. I always tell the boys they're going to overeaters, or you're going to get your bait in shape, you know. You're going to find God, that's one thing. Do I have negative thinking? Do I sit around all day long going, "Nothing's ever going to happen good for me"? You know, life just sucks. You had my life, you'd feel the same way. It's living on emotions. Emotions are given to you for a reason, but not to be lived on. Pride. I have a lot of pride. Procrastination. Pride is in things you might be able to do well. People are just here and you talk about it, you know. Do I procrastinate? Do I put off? Resentment. Do I have some resentment? Is there selfish and self-seeking? The next line says self-condemnation, and what I want you to do, I don't want you to put a figure in there. I want you to write in there, in the blank spot next to it, plain God. Beating you up is plain God. Not your job. You're just not smart enough. I hate to tell you that. Self-importance. Yeah, if this, we wouldn't be having a meeting this week if it wasn't for Mike and Don. Well, yes, we would. There'd be somebody else do it. Self-justification. Now, I'm good at that. I can almost rest. If you hadn't done this, I wouldn't have done it. And you started it all. I mean, it just goes on and on. Self-pity. Stingy. Sloth. Sloth is an animal in the jungle. It's part of its self-defensive mechanism is it moves so slowly it blends right in with the colors of the landscape. They turn colors like white or black, or and they just fade. It's very hard to see in a tree. And what it really is meaning is, yeah, they got a plan, but boy, they don't go at it very quick, you know. Suspicious. Are you suspicious of everything and everybody? You can't hardly watch the world news anymore. I heard these politicians talking the other day on the news. They said, well, the American people don't trust us. We haven't trusted you people for 100 years. They've been, you know, vulgar, immoral, and trashy thinking. Now, lay that one on you for a minute. Okay. If you got that done, open your page. We probably won't finish this. It's noon now. We'll probably stop for lunch, but maybe we can get an idea of how this works. Somebody give me a figure out there of anger, just any of them. 15%. Look across the page, that means you have to be 85% calm. Now this is checking your thinking. If you're not 85% calm, adjust the anger figure to what it would make it come out to be 100. Does that make sense? So, if maybe I've missed it, maybe I'm angry 75% of the time and the other side ought to be 25. Got it? I told you don't worry about the first number because it's going to change as you work your way along here. Next one is, give me a figure of criticizing somebody. 30% means 70% looking for the good in people. Does that fit? Is that right? Do you look for the good in people 70% of the time? Do you or don't you?
I think I do.
This is a yes or no. Okay. So we'll give her that. So that that's hers. She belongs to her. All right, dishonesty. Give me a figure on dishonesty, somebody. Anybody? 5%. You look across the page and honesty is at 95%. That fits? Good. If it don't, change it. Doubt. Somebody give me a figure. 40%. Okay. Faith is 60%. Does that fit? Do you have faith 60% of the time? Some days. Okay, so if it doesn't fit, change it to what the figure ought to be. You're just getting as close as you can. We're going to go real quick now. I don't want you thinking too hard. Envy. Give me a figure on envy. Anybody? 50 on envy. So that means I'm grateful 50. Got it? Change the figure to fit. False pride. That's a lie about me. Social instincts involved. Give me a false pride figure. 80% on false pride. Thank you. Sold to an American. There you go. False pride, 80%. Simplicity is 20%. The answer to life, even though it doesn't sound like it, is simplicity. And in a God-given life, is in the way we live here is in simplicity. Frightened. Give me a figure. 10. Courage, 90%. Okay. Gluttony. Give me a figure. 50. Moderation. 50. Got it? Okay. Greedy. Give me a figure. 15. 85. Giving or sharing. If it don't fit, change the figure. Harmful acts. Figure. Nobody likes to admit this one. 0. I got 25. I'll take 25. That means if yours is 0, then good deeds in your life are 100%. You believe that? I'm going to change that. Okay. All right. Hate. Hate. 20% on hate. Means I got 80% love. Secret of life. You cannot have what you will not give. So if you want love, you got to give love. Can't have what you won't give. If you want forgiveness, you got to give forgiveness. Okay. Impatience. 55, somebody says. 45% patient then. On a 55 deal. Inconsiderate. 25. 75% considerate. Insincerity. 20. Straightforwardness. 80. Intolerance. Play the game. 30. Tolerance, 70. Laziness. 55 activity. I'd buy it. I'd buy it. Lustfulness. 50. Okay. All right. Anybody want to, you guys got to open up or what we're going to do? Keep after. All right, here we go. God bless you. Good to see you. It's like some people got washed out by rain. Nah, they just hadn't got back yet. We're going to go on without them. So we're working on this list that you guys have made. So what do we do next? So when you come in at night, remember what the book said about pluses and minuses. You come in at night, and that day you had a chance to be angry. And you decided to remain calm and trust your God, you give yourself a plus. If you carried the anger out, you give yourself a minus. Is that, do you understand how that works? Pluses and minuses. And you just keep going along and doing that, pluses and minuses. Some things will need more attention than others. If you're hitting somewhere, and see this thing up on top here says 90 to 100 equals an A in the third column. Is used to grade the score you end up with. For instance, what does yours say about anger? The first one. What did you come out with when you 25 anger, 75. So you put down 75 over here on this third column and look up here on your score sheet and that'd be a C. Got the idea? Pretty easy. Just stay with me now. You got three columns.
Two.
You only got two, aren't you sure? That's right. Here. Here, give them these, Mike, so they'll have some that are whole list of them. So you're going to score... Yeah. You're going to score yourself. Okay. He needs one over there. It's nice to keep one clean so you can make copies for your sponsorees or just to give away to people. It's a pretty simple exercise. So if I said I'd been criticizing, somebody give me what their final figure on criticizing over looking at the good was. No, it can't be that much. No, we're looking at the good side. All right, so you got a 70 on looking for the good, so you go up to your score plan up here, and it's, oh, that's a C. And you put a C over here on in that third column. Now, the idea is to continue on with this as long as you can, and you keep working with it every night, just leave it by the bedside. You can make this one sheet go for weeks at a time, just a little plus or a little minus. Everything on here doesn't apply to every day. Don't build yourself a sweat here, just go easy. But you'll see there's certain areas of your program that need some support and some help. And if you're on this side over here under trust and you're, you know, you don't trust 30% of the time, you need some help. So anything below 59 is failing. You're failing life. Anything that's 90 and above, we call an A life. And that's what you're looking for, an A life. Now, we've already told you that self can't overcome self, right? So let's go to step 11 of this book and find out a way to get a little help. Because Lord knows I need it. Look on page 99. Very simple exercise. If you use this exercise in combination, which is called the St. Francis Prayer, I will educate you to this. Francis didn't write this prayer. This prayer is written as a summation of his lifestyle, but we call it the St. Francis Prayer. Someone else wrote it about him. You can't find any roots where he ever wrote this. So let's take a look at this thing and see if we can find a 10-step inventory as we're just now looking at within this prayer. He says, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. He knows about powerlessness. Francis knows about powerlessness. Why? He wouldn't have to ask God if he had any power. He'd just go do it. No. God, I want to be a... Let me be a channel. What is a channel? Something that's passing through. God works through you. Okay? You have no power. But if you stay in fit spiritual condition, he can use you. That where there is hatred, I may bring love. Does that look anything like this 10-step inventory we're looking at? Mm-hmm. Sure it does. Sure it does. Where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. Here's some more. Where there is discord, I may bring harmony. Where there is error, I may bring truth. Where there is doubt, I may bring faith. Where there is despair, I may bring hope. Just like the 10-step inventory, this is just expanded, that's all. Okay. That where there are shadows, I may bring light, and where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant me I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted. Amazing. To understand and be understood. Big principle in AA. Those are called paradoxes. To love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting altruistic behavior that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. And it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. My sponsor says, and there are some segments of AA who believe that the first 60 pages will kill the old person. My sponsor says, if the steps are carefully taken, that the steps will burn a man into ashes, and upon those ashes arises a brand new being that's never been here before. There is a chance here of becoming brand new. I don't know of any other places. Some churches do that, I guess. I'm not that familiar with them. Now, you use this at night, this prayer, or particularly in the morning when you go out to your life, just use it every day. Don't have to believe it, just use it. And you start working this 10-step inventory at night. I will guarantee you in 1 month, this, which is your negatives on this side, will begin to move over to the positive side, and you haven't done anything. And you will gain yourself what we call an A life. And an A life is where you're happy, joyous, and free. It's fourth dimensional living. That's very best. Okay. If we have questions later, we can talk about them. We're going to get into a vision for you. This is Bill's summation of history. From the start in June of 35 to April of 39. He does a wonderful job. I think I heard you say your favorite chapter. Bill is not a professional writer. He writes from the heart. Therefore, a book called Language of the Heart. He writes by feeling. He's not a professional. He, in this particular chapter, by feeling, and that's why he could write to wives, because he wrote from feeling. That's why he could write a lot of stuff. So he says, a vision for you, chapter 11, page 151. For most normal folks, drinking means, by this time I know I'm not normal, right? Okay. Means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It's joyful intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. I had all that feelings when drinking, in the first part of my drinking in the early days, until the disease progressed. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. Old pleasures were gone. That's bottom. Exactly. I understand it perfectly. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do so. Alcohol took me down a path, and it took me to hell. And I couldn't kill myself, and I just lived in hell. Drinking was no fun anymore, just like in Wilson's life. It just wasn't. It was survival. It wasn't fun. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. Trying to get that old thinking. The first time I ever took a drink, man. Oh, man, I never felt that good in my life. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society and from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapors that his loneliness settled down. It's thickened, ever becoming blackened. You're finding bottom here. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Lord companion. I was the Lord companion. In the end, I didn't want to drink with anybody but me. I didn't want to share anything. The awful awakening to the face of the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. How many of you people here took it far enough that you got to see a few things that aren't real? Yeah, that's good. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. By experience, they will understand. Now and then he says, a serious drinker being dry at the moment says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, have a better time. Ex-problem drinkers. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He comes to AA like that. He's forced here. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like being here. He wants to be able to go back to the good old days. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. You got it. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness as just as few do. I have been there. I have been there. Consistently drank until I couldn't. You can only go in a laboratory about 14 days. About 10 days is pretty maximum for most people who don't eat and just drink, and that's what I did. And then you've got to detox. And I don't know anything about detox. I think I got the flu. And I would have this, we had a bed in this big old place we lived, and I would jump up and take hot showers to try to get that smell out of my system, that vodka smell that you can't smell, you know the one? and it wouldn't wash off, and it'd take about 4 days. I didn't know what detox was. 3 days, 4 days later, I'd come out of it. And I'll see a few things along the way. I think I told you how to, did I ever tell you how to 12-step a speed freak? You walk in the door, and before you can open his mouth, you say, there it goes. And before you can open his mouth again, you say, here it comes. And you got him going. And then you lay the message on him. But if he starts talking, you'll never shut him up. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He'll be at the jumping off place he wishes for the end. It's called suicide. And I've had the gun against my head. And I broke January the 15th of 1985. And I called upon God. I didn't think God owed me anything. I haven't had a drink since. I said, God help me. Pretty simple prayer. When you're in real big trouble, you don't have no fancy prayer. You know what I'm saying? Prayer gets real simple. God help me. And within a very short time, I got help, and I ended up in a 28-day treatment program. I'm so drunk, they had to bring me in a wheelchair. I won't pass out. Well, I bet they wish they would have. And I'm laying in this bed, and this lady brings me some downers, Valium, which is alcohol in pill form. And I raise up from my elbow my best of my trying to look like I know something. And I said, what do you think I am, a drug addict? And she left. And the head nurse came in, and she was great. She's a new alcoholic inside and out. She said, Mr. Brown, can I talk to you, Mr. Spear? I said, we wanted you to take these pills because it will help you to come down. Because a guy like you has been drinking all for as much as you have, for as long as you have. Sometimes you're such a big man, we're scared of you. And there's a heart machine in the corner. I know what that thing is. And I said, give me the pills. I'll be glad to take them. She just knew how to approach me. I've never forgotten her. We have shown how we've gotten out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like other righteous people I see? Well, the old ideas. I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? If you've been in AA and you feel that way, you haven't been in AA. There's no telling you from my experience what it's like to take a person through the steps and watch transformation take place in front of you. And you know it's not you, and you know it's not them. Well, that don't leave much, right? I put whatever name on it you want to put on it, but that don't leave much. Something beyond ourselves has done something. And when you get into the battle here, get on the battle line with the rest of us that do this work. We need all the help we can get. Yes, there's a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. Here comes a little promise. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. When you're in a battle for people's lives, and I will add souls, let me tell you something. That's an exciting thing to do. Your imagination will be fired, promises. Life will mean something at last, promises. For years, life really didn't have much meaning other than drinking for me. The most satisfactory years of your existence lies ahead. I don't care how old you are when you got here. Ask Mike. He was kind of old when he got here. You can tell he's kind of old. He's been somewhere a long time. You can tell that. Another promise. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You are going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in sinking ships. It's absolutely true. Somebody said to me once, why don't you become a delegate? And I said, I got more alcoholics probably within a 4-block throw of my house that I couldn't take care of. I don't need to run to New York to do that. God bless the people that do. We need them to do that. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are the future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. The promise here. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. Oh, you betcha. God bless us. I mean, it's a wonderful experience. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties. For you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You have the power to do that. God has not chosen the qualified. He qualifies the chosen. Make sense? So don't worry about time. Don't put time limits on God. God, I love people that do that. You ought to be around here for about 5 years. And, you know, if I could stay sober for 5 years, I don't need you. I wouldn't have needed you. That was like Mike. I didn't know I was going to make the first meeting even. In the hospital. I wasn't too sure. Rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. If you're not glad to be a part of that, I'm trying to tell you, you're so self-centered, you need to look. I mean, you're not seeing what's going on around you. You go to meetings of AA and we have some fun and we listen to the speakers and it all sounds great. But underneath all of that, something is happening to people. Something extraordinary. Something beyond our own selves. And it happens every day. Worldwide nowadays, there's nothing like us anywhere in the world. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. All you got to do is listen to our stories and look at us and say, well, it's great. You know, one of the beneficial things of anything is just come to a meeting and sit there. I mean, that tells people something. You don't have to open your mouth. Oh, there's old George over there. He's been with us for 38 years. George ain't saying nothing, you know. But he represents 38 years of continuous sobriety. Should you wish them above all else be willing to make use of our experience? That's the newcomer. If you want to use our experience, we are sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. You're not supposed to recover. There's no known cure to this disease. Yet we do. Our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world's tide of alcoholism, defeated drinkers will seize upon it to follow its suggestions. Many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. Amazing. That's what happened to me. You could have killed me. I was ready to die at 50. I love life at 72. It's been the best thing I've ever found. I wouldn't have it any other way. They will approach still other sick ones, and the fellowship of alcoholics may spring up in each city and hamlet, haven for those who must find a way out in 1939. That's quite a prophecy. We are a worldwide organization today without a business plan. Think about it. Without a business plan. Because we didn't kill the spirit here. And so individuals took the program to other countries. Individuals, nobody told them to. Individuals got up and got a meeting started. There's a man named Noah up where I get to do the interview sometimes. And we run to Noah's meeting on Tuesday night when we're there because Noah has a meeting that he opens and closes mostly by himself. Up above Fort Bragg. Not Fort Bragg. Russian River. And I think so much of Noah that I love to take people down there, and sometimes we go down there with 15 or 20 people. He's never met Bob Pearson. He's never met Bob Smith. He doesn't even know who the people are. And we walk in there some nights, he's got the coffee made and the cookies out, and he's all by himself, just waiting for somebody to show up. And he did that for a long time. And sometimes people would show and sometimes they wouldn't. The people have gotten sober there and moved on, and Noah has stayed and maintained that station to keep that place open in case some alcoholic wants to find his way to that fellowship. That's very disappointing to go down there. Make a little coffee, drink a little coffee, eat your cookies. Oh, well, nobody's showing up tonight. I'll go home 15 minutes early. And when you walk in with 15 people and they came in 1961, he looks at them like, 61? I wasn't even born then. This is exciting, you know. He's not the only guy that ever happened to. Old-timer, but from Kansas City, Johnny the Candy Salesman, manned a meeting by himself for 2.5 years, waiting for an alcoholic to walk through the door, knocking on doors, looking for people. That's the kind of fire that comes with us in recovery. That's the kind of fire that comes from the inside. We do things that we would never have even thought of doing before. In the next chapter, working with others, in the chapter working with others, you gather an idea of how we approach and aid others to health. Suppose now that though you or several families have adopted this way of life, he's talking about Akron, you will want to know more of how to proceed from this point. Perhaps the best way of treating you to a glimpse of your future will be to describe the growth of the fellowship among us. Here's a brief account. What he's saying is you're all alone. And those old-timers that were all alone were called founders. They founded the Kansas City meeting. They founded Trent, New Jersey. They founded these meetings. We walk in and they're already founded. There's 300 meetings in Contecosta County. You can't hardly go anywhere without falling over one. Years ago, now he's going to give you a little history. Years ago in 1935, one of our numbers made a journey to a certain western city, Akron, Ohio. Bill Wilson. I have a CD put out by GSO that has Bill arriving at Akron on the train with all the train sounds. So the steam is going, shh, the brakes are put on, you know, and the guy starts, very professional voice says, and Bill Wilson is coming to Akron, you know, it's quite a deal. From a business standpoint, his trip came off badly. Bill thought he was going to Akron. This is a lesson in God's will. Bill thought he was going to Akron to take over a company. The company was a machine shop, a big one, that serviced all the rubber industries, the Goodyears, the Firestones, and various and sundry other companies, and they all owned this together, and there was a chance to take over the stock, and he had been promised a big job. He was sober a while. He was going to get they had a house that came with it, and servants, and drive limousine-driven cars, and he could get Lois out of the park. That's what he went for. But that's not what happened. And as things fell through, you see, his personal little plans fell through. And he's desperate. And he's in the Mayflower Hotel. And he's pacing the lobby. He's got about $10, not enough to pay his room rent. He's got to stay through Monday to meet with the lawyers from the other side. He's already been put down for drinking. They know about him. He gets desperate. And he went to his experience. How had he stayed sober for 6 months? He'd stayed sober by working with others. No, even though they weren't getting sober, but he had stayed sober. That was all the experience he had. And so he could hear the tinkling of the glasses in the place and the camaraderie in the bar and the music and the gaiety, and $10 would certainly get him drunk in those days. And maybe he could sit there because everybody knows what's going on. He's a big shot from Wall Street. And people in those days would invite you home. Maybe they'd get a tip on the market or something, but they'd just want to know what's happening on Wall Street. And it's kind of a big deal. So he went, messes around, gets some nickels, and goes to the phone booth. And on the side over here in those days, they used to put a list of all the churches because good Christians and religious people of all types would want to go to church on Sundays, even though you're traveling, so you'd want to know where your church was. And so he called along, and he made this call, and he got a guy by the name of Walter Tunk. Walter Tunk was the Episcopal minister who will play I've got a little bit of a talk on him. I'm just a nutter with this kind of stuff. I just pick it up in pieces. I was like a little, like a new father over a child, and I found Walter Tunk, just the opening remark, you know. I got him connected, I know who he is. And he gives Bill a list of 10 people. And Bill would start his conversation, "I'm a rum hound from New York." He liked to call himself that. Bill Ditto has picked that up. He calls himself that nowadays. "And I haven't had a drink for 6 months." And he said, "I need to find another alcoholic to talk to." That's all he knows. He don't know nothing else. Just got to find another alcoholic to talk to. So he calls this list, and everybody's doing everything, and he finally gets a lady by the name of Henrietta Stibling. Henrietta Stibling is the daughter-in-law of John Stibling, the founder of Goodyear Rubber Company. And if you're watching Castles of America, you will see the castle, the Stibling Castle. In those days, the rich people used to like to show off a little bit like the Europeans that they came from by having huge manicured lawns, acres of it, big homes, hundreds of rooms. And this castle's got, I call it castle, over 100 rooms. It's not clear why she's married to his son. She met him while she was in college. A Vassar. She's a Vassar graduate. Her daddy was the only child of a judge out of El Paso, Texas, and his wife. They were pretty upward mobile people. And, she marries this guy, meets a rich husband, what happens, and she marries this guy. And for some reason, that's not going well. She's living in the gatehouse of this mansion with her three kids. And John Jr. will become a congressman later on and has been interviewed about AA a lot. 2 weeks before this happened, I'll leave you to make these decisions. If it's not God's hands, it's certainly his fingers. 2 weeks before this had happened, Henrietta, who runs the Oxford groups in that area, calls up all the people that come to her meeting. She's like the secretary. And said, "We're going to share something costly. Cost like sharing this list of your liabilities. Sharing that maybe you're not as honest as you'd like to think people think you are. Sharing that you're less than in terms of relationship to God." And so everybody had that in mind. I guess you avoided the meeting if you didn't want to share something costly. You just didn't go, right? So they show up, and Dr. Bob's been going to this meeting for 2.5 years, and he can't quit drinking. Some people say, historians, you get all kind of history, that it was a setup. I don't believe so. I believe it was just a normal function of the Oxford group people. And so in this thing, they're all admitting their character defects, and it comes to Bob. And Bob says, for the first time that we know of, that he admitted he was an alcoholic. And he said, I'm an alcoholic and I can't stop drinking. And as a group, they basically said, well, does everybody want prayer? Yes, we want prayer. And so they all got down and they knelt for, and they prayed for Bob. Like we do here when we leave you guys, we have you put it in the prayer circle and we pray for others, and they're praying for each other and getting the thing done. I don't know what you would think, but 2 weeks later, a guy calls up from a guy you don't know, and calls up and says, "My name is Bill Wilson. I'm a rum hound from New York, and I must find another alcoholic to speak to." What would you think? She doesn't know this guy from Adam. She is wealthy, or at least supported by a wealthy family. She says, "Come over right now." He has no clue to this guy. He may be a throat cutter. We don't know what he is. But she sees it as an answer to prayer. Does that make sense? That's how sure she was. And it turns out she's right. And Bill Wilson comes over immediately. How many times have I called you up and said, I'm a rum hound from New York. My name is Don Brown. I got to find another Aki to talk to. Talking to you might get somewhere, but if I'm talking to normal, they'd go, you're who? No, I can't help you, sir. Click. Over he comes. She calls Ann immediately because it's answer to prayer, and Ann's in this Oxford group, and she's very excited about it. In fact, this woman is actually Bill and Bob's sponsor in the spiritual life for a while. And so Dr. Bob couldn't come that day because he's drunk. And his Mother's Day, and he'd showed up with a potted plant. He was potted. They like to make a joke and say he fell out of the table. Smitty said that's not true. His dad always went up to the bedroom and passed out. Next day, they bring him over. Bill doesn't have any money. Bill is supposed to be there working on this other deal. This lady has a little influence, so she gets him a room out at the golf course, where a friend of hers had a room, and he stays there a while. Not very long, about a week or so. And then Ann Smith gets the idea to invite Bill, who's come to work on this deal, to come and live with their family, America. She didn't say, come over and have soup on Thursday. She said, we want you to come and live with us. Bill's got a wife called Lois up in New York. Bill's got this deal he's trying to put together. And Bill says yes. And for that summer, he stayed with them. But first she asked him, was it a miracle? And he said yes, was a miracle. He had other things that he could be doing. And that's the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you believe that Bill was sent to Akron to take over a company? Or do you believe he was sent there to meet Dr. Bob? Which one of them worked? Then obviously God's will was for him to meet Dr. Bob. I don't think you get a God story bigger than that. And the foundation of this program was born with these two men. From a business standpoint, the trip came off badly. It sure did. Had he been successful in his enterprise, he would have been set on his feet financially, which at that time seemed vitally important. But his venture wound up in lawsuit and bogged down completely. The proceeding was shot through with much hard feelings and controversy. No room for that in AA. No room for that here. Bitterly discouraged, he found himself in a strange place, distributed and almost broke. Still physically weak and sober, but a few months, he saw that his predicament was dangerous. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom? One dismal afternoon, he paced the hotel lobby, wondering how his bill was to be paid. Fear. At one end of the room stood a glass-covered directory of a church, local churches. Down the lobby, a door opened into the attractive bar. He could see the gay crowd inside. In there, he would find companionship and release. Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape up an acquaintance and would have a lonely weekend. Of course, he couldn't drink, and why not sit hopefully at the table a bottle of ginger ale before him? After all, had he not been sober 6 months now? Perhaps he could handle, say, three drinks. We have moved from the little castle water, solar water, and the mind now says, no more than three drinks. We are in danger. Big danger, and that quick. And that's how it happens, that quick. Fear gripped him. He was on thin ice. Again, it was the old insidious insanity, the first drink. With a shiver, he turned away and walked down the lobby to the church directory. Music and gaiety chatter still floated to him from the bar. But what about his responsibility? His family and the men who would die because they would not know how to get well. Ah, yes. I've got responsibilities there. Those other alcoholics, there must be many such in this town. He would phone the clergyman. Came out to be Walter Tongue. His sanity returned by taking some action away from the drink. His sanity returned. No longer thought of the three drinks. God, selecting a church at random from the directory, he stepped into a booth and lifted the receiver. His call to the clergyman led him presently to a certain resident of that town. Henrietta Stiveling. Although, then from Stiveling to Bob, because we're going to talk about Bob here, to a certain resident of that town who, though formerly able and respected, was nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. It was a usual situation, home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, standing damage. He had a desperate desire to stop. Sometimes when people come to AA, we look at their cars they're driving, and we call those alcoholic bumps. You know, there's the car just all beat up, you know. That's it, whiskey wrinkles. There you go, good name. But saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. Down to Bob, it says, this refers to Bill's first visit with Dr. Bob. These men later became co-founders of AA. Bill's story opens the text of this book. Dr. Bob heads the story section. When our friend related his experience, the man agreed that no amount of willpower he might muster could stop his drinking for long. A spiritual experience, he conceded, was absolutely necessary, but the price seemed high. It is high. Upon the basis suggested, 4-9, the spiritual experience. I have a disease that is so bad that it requires a spiritual solution. And the price is high because it means that you're going to get humbled. It means ego smashing at depth, Bill talks about. He told how he lived in constant worry about those who might find out about his alcoholism. He had, of course, the familiar alcoholic obsession that few knew of his drinking. Why, he urged, should he lose the remainder of his business only to bring still more suffering to his family and by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? He would do anything, he said, but that. Dangerous business. He wouldn't make his ninth step in there. And so he drank again. He went out and made his 97 minutes and never took another drink in 15 years. He is called the Prince of the 12 Steppers. In that 15 years, mostly the first 10, he worked with 5,000 drunks. Hospitalized them, took care of them, no charge, and sponsored them. Wilson says he had a 60% rate of recovery, which meant that 3,000 of those 5 recovered, and many later on recovered. That is a piece of work. I'm not even close. People look at me today, oh, how could you sponsor? I'm not even close to that. Tremendous piece of work. Being intrigued, I will never say in AA, never. Anything but that. I will never, that's my ego talking, I'll never do that. I've learned better. Being intrigued, I do make deals with God now and then under pressure. Which is about as foolish as you can get. Being intrigued, however, he invited our friends to his home. Sometimes later, and just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, he went on a roaring bender. For him, this was the spree that ended all sprees. He saw that he would have to face his problems squarely, that God might give him mastery. I can't cheat God. This is not between you and your sponsor. This is not between you and the fellowship of AA. This is not between you. This is between you and God. If you figure out a way to cheat God, let me know right away. I take my card and call me. I may want to join you, you know. One morning, he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell what he had feared, what his trouble had been. He's going out to do his nine-step work now. He found himself surprisingly well received and learned that many knew of his drinking. Somebody asked him about anonymity. I said, I didn't care nothing about it when I was drunk, you know. Stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people he had hurt. He trembled as he went about, for this might mean ruin, particularly for a person in his line of business, a doctor. He died from cancer of the colon. That's what he was, a proctologist. At midnight, he came home exhausted, but very happy. He has not had a drink since. So when you're working with people and they're having problems and they've worked some steps, you need to find out where they are in the steps and what they haven't done. It's about what they haven't done, not what they've done. I guarantee you, you'll find it somewhere. They're not sponsoring. They're not doing this. Some people want to substitute sponsoring for being a delegate. Not what our book says. He's not had a drink since. We shall see. He now means a great deal to this community, and the major liability of 30 years of hard drinking has been repaired in full. But life was not easy for the two friends. Plenty of difficulties presented themselves. Both saw that they must keep spiritually active. One day they called upon the head nurse of a local hospital to explain their need. Her name was Hawes, H-A-A-S, Miss Hawes, and inquired that she had a first-class alcoholic prospect. His name was Bill Dotson, alcoholic number 3. Not the first guy they ever tried with. There was much talk about the mental state preceding the first drink. They're going to tell you to tell them about the doctor's opinion. That's part of your story. Yes, that's me, said the sick man, the very image. You fellows know your stuff all right, but I don't see what good it'll do. You fellows are somebody. I was once, but I'm nobody now. From what you tell me, I know more than ever I can't stop. At this, both the visitors burst into laughter. Why? Because they'd been there. They'd been exactly where he'd been. Damn little to laugh about that I can see. You bet it's not very funny to him. Two friends spoke of their spiritual experiences and told him about the course of action they had carried out, 1 through 12. No pussyfooting around here. Give it to them straight from the shoulder. They'll make their choice. He interrupted. I used to be strong for the church, but that won't fix it. I prayed to God on hangover morning and swore that I'd never touch another drop, and by 9 o'clock I was boiled as an owl. Next day found the prospect more, you see that prospect stuff? More receptive. He'd been thinking it over. Maybe you're right, he said. God ought to be able to do anything. Then he added, he sure didn't do much for me when I was trying to fight this booze racket alone. On that third day, the lawyer gave his life to the care and direction of his Creator. He took a third step. 3 days in, he's convinced. And he said he was perfect.
Great Taurus, down on the end, got the lights on.
Great Taurus, down on the end, got the lights on. Well, the lights are on in here. He's doing his. That's it. And he said perfectly willing to do anything necessary. His wife scarcely daring to be hopeful, though she had thought she saw something different about her husband already. The spiritual change was in place. He had begun to have a spiritual experience. That afternoon he put on his clothes and walked from the hospital a free man. He entered a political campaign, making speeches, frequently men's gathering places of all sorts, often staying up all night. He lost the race by only a small, narrow margin, but he had found God, and in finding God, he had found himself. Wow. Oh, man. That was June of 1935. He never drank again. He, too, was to become a respected and useful member of his community. He had helped other men to recovery and a power in his church from which he had been long absent. He never learned to drive a car. So if you visited him, he would take you around Akron on the bus. I think that's really, you're an educated man, never learned to drive a car. He worked his way through college by working at the rubber, in the rubber industry. It makes kind of sense. He's a poor boy. So you see, there were three alcoholics in that town who now felt that they had to give to others what they had found or be sunk. You're not keeping your, if you don't go on and sponsor, you're not keeping your word of your third step. You're not keeping your third step contract with God. After several failures to find others, a fourth turned up. He came through an acquaintance who had heard the good news. He proved to be a devil-may-care young man whose parents could not make out whether he wanted to stop drinking or not. His name was Ernie Gilbreth. His story was called The 7-Month Slip. You will marry Dr. Bob's daughter, Sue. They did not like that. Dr. Bob had heard his inventory. He's a lot older than her. There is a great book. Today we have lots of books. It's called Children of the Healer. It'll tell you all about that relationship. A lot of sadness in Children of the Healer. Drink it or not. Her life, she had a daughter. She had several children. The daughter was what you'd call movie star quality, I suppose. And by the time she's 22 years old, we suspect she's alcoholic. By the time she's 22, she will shoot her own child and shoot herself. Murder-suicide. Horrible. Sue almost never got over that. Ernie, she says, never did. Whether he wanted to stop drinking or not. They were deeply religious people, much shocked by their son's refusal to have anything to do with church. He suffered horribly from his sprees, but it seemed as if nothing could be done for him. He consented, however, to go to the hospital, where he occupied the very room recently vacated by the lawyer. Now he had three visitors. It was the custom in those days, when a man was hospitalized, that the fellowship would visit him, each person, in that hospital. After a bit, he said, "The way you fellows put this spiritual business stuff makes sense. I'm ready to do business." We call that a third step decision. I guess the old folks were right after all, so one more was added to the fellowship. All this time, our friend of the hotel lobby incident, Bill Wilson, remained in town, in that town. He was there 3 months. He now returned home, leaving behind the first acquaintance, Dr. Bob. The lawyer, Bill Dobson, and the devil-may-care chap, Ernie Gilbert. Ernie will not stay sober. He'll go out after the 1950 convention and never come back. These men have found something brand new in life. Though they knew they must help other alcoholics, if they would remain sober, I think they're telling you something. That motive became secondary. It was to transcend by the happiness they found in giving themselves to for others. Altruistic behavior. They shared their homes, their slender resources. They gladly devoted their spare hours to fellow sufferers. Everybody in Akron, according to Smith Jr., kept alcoholics in their homes while they were being treated or waiting to be treated in the hospital. And there, in their home, some guys stayed as long as 10 months. And they didn't charge. But other homes did charge some. But all kept people in their homes. Akron was a mecca. When people found out that there was a doctor, particularly a doctor in Akron that had a cure for alcoholism, people showed up. I'm telling you, they just showed up in the middle of the night. They came, they were brought by loving and sometimes not so loving relatives, usually. There's the address, Ardmore. Get out, idiot. Don't come back till you're sober, you know. See, we got knocks on the door night and day. I'm telling you, start, you know, really something else. They would be willing by day or night to place a new man in the hospital and visit him afterwards. They had to have a plan for payment. $75. The guy who had gone through and got sober put up the $75 for his sponsoree. You had to be sponsored into the hospital. The sponsor had to bring you and pick you up and pay your $75, and you had to pay the $75 for the next guy. Amazing. Amazing. And visit him afterwards. They grew in numbers. They experienced a few distressing failures. But in those cases, they made an effort to bring the man's family into a spiritual way of living. That's what we've been talking about. The wives, family afterwards, mentioned in the 12-step work from chapter 7. All of this, all about the whole thing, bringing them in. Thus relieving much worry and suffering. 18 months. A year and 6 months later, these three had succeeded with seven more. We got 10 alcoholics in Akron sober. 10. Seeing much of each other scarce, an evening passed as someone's home did not shelter a little gathering of men and women happy in their release and constantly thinking how they might present their discovery to some newcomer. Do you pray about newcomers? Do you ever say to God, "Let me, before I walk up and introduce myself, let me say the right thing here"?